The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful, with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. Chad surprised me recently by getting us some spooky garden rocks. They're decorative rocks for our front garden that look like spooky ghosts. Couldn't have asked for anything more perfect. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers and sports fans to foodies, mixologists, and gardeners. You'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/goosebuds. That's uncommongoods.com/goosebuds for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Good job, future Kevin.
Hello, my future Kevin.
Coming to CBS this fall, my what? Future Kevin.
Is that like directed DVD or?
No, CBS. It's coming to CBS this fall. Oh.
I thought you said CVS.
The Cartoon Broadcasting Service, Kevin.
I thought future Kevin was going to be in the As Seen on TV section.
No, dude, this is prime time. We're bringing you to, this is the upfronts right now. We're pitching the show where I think you are, you know, Kevin Cole is a 20-something, just out of college yep. student looking for direction in life. And then what happens when a time portal opens up?
But he married an alien?
Wait, whoa! Let me get the time travel in there before you put the Urkel in there. Let me get the...
The elf,
yeah. I mean...
A time machine is definitely leading to an Urkel situation, for sure.
Yeah, some sort of hijinks. I just... to finish the pitch, I think there's another Kevin from the future that's going to come and tell 20-something Kevin what to do with his life, and it's my future Kevin.
Well, if I'm showing up in my early 20s, I'm already way too late. I gotta go further back. I think I steered the ship right in my early 20s. I've made some moves to make sure I'll be a happy person.
Maybe that's the hijinks.
An emergency turnaround in your early 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the hijinks. You meant to shoot for 16-year-old or whatever, but you ended up in the 20s. And you're like, well, fuck. Well, I might as well enjoy it. It was a one-way trip. Like the Tomorrow War. And 20-year-old Kevin's like, what do you mean the Tomorrow War? What's that? And Kevin's like, don't worry about it. It's a very popular movie in the future.
It's extreme. It's like the Mystery Men of the Future. You'll get that reference because you're me.
Kevin goes, oh, okay. Ben Stiller in that? Nobody should be.
Why isn't Ben Stiller in Tenet? Why isn't Ben Stiller in a lot of movies? Why did he spend so much time on Secret Life of Walter Mitty? I don't know.
Oh my God, that fucking movie.
I had told you about the cat, right? Or no, that's not Secret Life. It's whatever his TV show is. He like was all obsessed with this cat, and my friend had to edit it across two different scenes.
What are you talking about?
My friend Sam works in VFX, and he had to edit. There was a perfectly good take, the best take of the thing. And they're like, we're going with this take. He demands it. And
yeah. Ben Stiller
demands this take. But a cat walked across the frame in this take, and he really thinks it's cute and likes it. And thematically, it works for him. So let's put that cat into this shot. So they had to VFX. a cat across, just a random cat across into another shot. So if you've ever watched, I don't remember what the show is called. If you've ever watched the show, look for the cat.
Yeah. If you ever watch any show ever, look for the cat.
Yeah, let me find it.
Yeah.
I think I agree. You should put a cat in things.
Oh, yeah. I did not find, and I know that Sam, who did it, also really loves cats. So I'm sure he was happy to do it as well. But
yeah, I'm happy to look at a cat for hours.
Me too, man.
At some point you could be like, hey, Mr. Stiller, we could, you know, if you really want to, we could just get the cat and have it walk in front of the camera again on this next take. And like, no.
Had to be how the cat walked in the moment.
That moment in time needs to be, yeah.
He was being an auteur.
Also, you can't get a cat to do what you want when you know that's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to work that, you have to work that reverse psychology angle on it for sure.
Yeah.
I can't find what this show is called. It's not Severance. Because he's, you know what? I'm looking for producer, and he directed the show.
Oh, shit.
Or was it directed?
Oh, he directed this.
Paul's hacking.
Stiller joint. Yeah, logging in.
Paul did some research.
It's called Escape at Dannemora.
Okay, never heard about this show. No offense to Sam. Never heard about it.
I think this is it.
Actually haven't heard of this either. What's it? What is it?
It's a TV miniseries.
I like those.
It's got to be that, because I'm looking at his other stuff, and everything else is way too old, because that's 2018, and that's definitely Sam time.
A female prison employee in upstate New York becomes romantically involved with a pair of inmates and helps them escape. Cool. Yeah, I can see that be a scene where you really need a cat to walk in front of it. Yeah.
Can you IMDb your own friend to see what he worked on?
Oh my god, I could!
Yeah.
Oh!
Dude, that's hacking, man.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. That's the... You're smart.
Then, you know.
Where's Sam Hall at? Samuel Hall. Oh my god, there's a lot of Sam Halls.
Yeah, what? That sounds right. Wow, Sam's getting a really big spotlight on this podcast.
Maybe he's just very busy and prolific.
Don't worry, I'm gonna look. I'm gonna find him.
I like while you look at this, I like the premise that my future Kevin, yeah, that your future Kevin came to the wrong time, but now he's just got to make do. So you have what, 20-something Kevin and like 40-something Kevin, and there's no, you know, Terminator type thing where you got to get to Skynet because you've missed the date. So it's really just like enjoying life.
Maybe this is a season two idea, but I'd really like it if past Kevin could help future Kevin out with some stuff. Hmm. Like maybe I also learn that I need past Kevin. Like that's our like arc. Like, all right, past Kevin, I don't like you and you don't like me, but we got to work together. But then I come to find out that, you know, even though I'm trying to help past Kevin, maybe it's him who's really helping me. You know,
ooh, I like that. You know, here's the finale of the show to spoil the end of season 9.
Yeah,
you past Kevin, or yes, I guess present day Kevin, realize mm-hmm. that, well, if you're present Kevin and these events are still yet to happen, you'll just be smart next time. You're gonna make a time machine and you'll make sure you don't make that mistake where you go accidentally to your 20s. You'll go back to your teens like you meant to, but then you'll realize, and you do it. You fix the machine. You're building a machine. You're about to pull the lever and time travel back. And for whatever reason, looks exactly like the Time Machine starring Guy Pearce. And but right before you do, you'd be like, oh, but then all the adventures I had with my future self would never happen. Even though I watched in season 6 my future self get torn apart by zebras. And I know that happens to me. That time we spent together was too strong. And so you sabotage the machine and you go back to your 20s.
Wow.
This is a great story. I only caught the last couple sentences of it, but I love what I heard. I have terrible news. Sam Hall is not listed because Sam Hall is a subcontractor for a large company that does Whoa. VFX, and his name has not unionized VFX artist now.
Wow. That was a chilling reminder of the world we live in.
Sorry.
No credit.
No credits.
Additional editing materials provided by...
Oh my god.
Shit.
A brilliant callback, Jen.
Thank you.
I love providing additional materials to corporations.
I love it. 2 years to provide additional materials is always good.
I went to college for additional material provisions. Provisor. Additional material provisor.
Can we talk about just a major corporation slapping Goosebumps on the cover to make money?
What was that? Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Can we like speed bump this? Rohan Umpleby, or whatever your name is. Do you know what Goosebumps are?
Rohan Umpleby on IMDb. We're reading your review on the Cuckoo Clock of Doom, episode 3 of the Goosebumps show.
Are you aware of what the series A Goosebumps is?
Goosebumps was an artistic endeavor before it sold out.
If I could also speed bump this, Are we sure we're not making fun of someone who has maybe a tenuous grasp on English?
That could be true.
No! No, this is an eloquently written essay about the episode, just taking a very, like, anti... Like, I love an anti-corporate stance, but Goosebumps has been corporate from the beginning.
Yeah.
It always has been.
I think regardless of knowledge of the language of which this review is written in, I do believe this person understands that they are mad at a corporation, but is maybe unaware that Goosebumps is simply another corporation that has Predator handshaked with another corporation to create a new product.
To imply that Goosebumps at some point had soul, I think is like the main theme that runs through the entirety of this podcast.
Yes. We try to find it. We're looking for that
soul. We try to find it.
In the documentary of Goosebuds, it will be called something like Saving RL's Soul or something. Uh-huh.
Finding RL.
Finding RL.
Or IRL.
Oh, that is so good. Lowercase IRL.
Well, then it's like an Apple device.
Bumpy Road, The Path to Reading Every Goosebumps Book. Starring Chad Quant as himself.
I don't want to be the star of that. I'm putting
and future Kevin as past Kevin. Paul Ritchie, played by a hand puppet of Paul Ritchie.
Oh, that would be so great, though. I mean, Paul, you're very charismatic on camera, but that'd be great.
Paul Ritchie, edited in by Sam Hall, but uncredited.
AI scan of Paul Ritchie, even though he's still alive and was available by Paul Ritchie.
Sam does not. I do not believe Sam listens to this podcast, but he is being blown the F up. I'm going to have to let him know.
What the hell, Sam? Come on, man.
Come on, Sam.
My mom listens to this podcast. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Oh, hi, future Kevin's mom.
Future? What? Oh, future Kevin.
Yeah, future Kevin's. Well, also Kevin's mom in the future.
Got
when
it.
You're listening to this.
Oh, yeah. You're smarter than me.
It all works. Time's weird.
We're all pretty tired.
We are. shout out to 3 a.m. fireworks, y'all. The best thing to wake up to. At first, I woke up and I was like, "What guns?" But it wasn't guns. Because I
shout out to daylight savings. Still feeling the effects a week later.
Certainly feeling that as well. I was like guns, but then I was like, no, that is too many bullets. There would no one would fire that many bullets. It would be obscene to be firing that many bullets.
Maybe that's the perfect way to cover up a murder is you just fire a bunch of bullets.
Yeah. What if you're fighting like Zack Fair from Final Fantasy VII and he's deflecting them with his Buster
that's
sword?
That's true.
You have to fire a lot of bullets.
Yeah, he's Jedi-ing away your bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. he's deflecting them with the flat of his Buster sword and charging forward like he does.
It's splitting a couple of them with the edge.
Yeah, he can twirl that because he's been given Mako energy powers.
Hell
he's
yeah.
He's got that glowy ball in his sword, right?
Yeah.
You put the magic ball in your weapons and it gives it powers.
He's got that ball of grandpa's stories that lets him burn things. That's how materia works. That's
the thing in Final Fantasy? I don't know how.
Well, so the materia is crystallized life stream, which is the memories of the ancients. So.
I thought you were saying it was tale-based, like weavings of tales. But in a sense, it is.
Depending on how you think someone experiences crystallized wisdom socketed into a piece of metal, it could be you hear a story from Grandpa about how to cast fire magic.
Are there ever any distinguishing between, like, the quality of the memories of the ancients, you know what I mean? Like, as opposed to saying, oh, well, they're all really wise.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that would be rarer and better magic.
Like, Gil Up is, like, a really bad memory.
But, unless you're poor.
That's true.
Yeah, some ancient has, like a lot of memories of doing their laundry. Would that make materia?
Aerith has a line about how she has quote-unquote useless materia, and, like, I guess that could exist. Where it's just like, here's how you tetherball real good.
I see.
Here's all my biggest failures, materia.
I just wanted to bring up Zack Fair from Final Fantasy VII and beyond, because apparently he's voiced by Endless Mike Hellstrom from
What?
Whoa!
Yep. Incredible.
All's connected.
Found that one out, and I'm really happy about it.
That, I am so excited now for more. Final Fantasy
well,
remake.
they recast him.
No, why?
They recast him for FF7 remake. I don't know. They think they're suddenly too fucking good for Endless Mike now. Hashtag bring back Endless Mike.
Yes, let's, dude. Like, forget any missions this podcast had. Finding RL's soul on the back burner. We're an Endless Mike Hellstrom podcast.
Yeah,
we're gonna get that guy work.
I was so happy and then totally rip shit when I found out they recast him for a remake.
Damn, Zach Fair, yeah, Caleb Pierce. No offense, Caleb Pierce.
I'm sure you work hard. I'm sure you're a hardworking guy, Caleb Pierce. And you know, maybe Endless Mike's got a better project that he can't devote all this time to. But
no offense, you know. But Endless Mike, it comes for thee.
Yep.
I found the useless material. It's a pedometer materia. It's the useless material.
It's just the memories of Miles Walked. Of is steps. That what that'd be?
There's, I don't know if you've played the remake, Chad, but there is a.
I played the first remake. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There is a pedometer materia that just tracks your steps. I don't even know what that really does.
Why? What does that fucking do?
I don't know.
I want to know what the memories are associated with HP up, because it just makes you beefier.
That's like memories of a good soup.
Oh man!
You know? I go into like an unlimited onsen. Is that what it's called?
No. Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting it.
You know,
like a shabu shabu, and then just like
shabu is an onsen for your uncooked meat.
Yeah, both valid. I think would be both valid memories of the material. Yeah,
I did. Now I might be, I could be falling into the classic video gamers trap of undervaluing pedometer materia. Because there is a hint at the bottom that says may do something after taking a number of steps with it set. So maybe there is some secret joy that you get after you've done it. And I'm not going to look it up because I don't want to know.
Maybe at the end of all of the remakes, when Final Fantasy VII Rebirth Part 6 comes out in 2029, it'll be like, if you had that pedometer materia and you walked a million miles, Sephiroth-like will marry you. Welcome to Goosebuds.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to Goosebuds. I'm Kevin.
I'm Chad.
And I'm Paul.
If this is your first episode, normally we cover the books of R.L. Stine, but today we're going back into the TV works of R.L. Stine, or at least the works inspired by R.L. Stine.
Indeed, these are probably the ones he's touched the least, I would assume.
Yeah, well, I wonder if he's... Yeah, did he get final edit? He's like, put a cat in there.
I want a cat walking across the screen. No, we know he hates cats. We know there's cats.
Yeah, there would he cut out every cat that showed up in this. Anything that if they showed in the background, actually they probably picked a town where no cats exist to film.
I don't think anyone in this town has a pet.
Yeah, where the fuck are the dogs and cats? You're right.
They were like, we're dealing with kids. Well, we're gonna get rid of all the animals. We're doing half of Disney's advice. Only half.
Was Disney's advice to get rid of all kids and animals, said, or to have only kids and animals?
Yeah, famously, or maybe apocryphally, because I don't know if this is true, Walt Disney supposedly said never work with children or animals. And then his animations were filled with those things. But
I think Frasier also said that. He said he said no children or animals, and he lost.
Frasier also said, if you bring a child or an animal in front of me, I will eat it.
Yeah.
Because I am preparing to be Beast again for X-Men, and I will eat that child or animal.
A wild turn of events here, guys. I googled the quote because I was like, I've heard that it was Disney, but apparently it was one W.C. Fields.
Huh.
Famously from Philadelphia.
Shut up!
Famously from Philadelphia, but his famous quote about Philadelphia is talking shit on it, Chad.
That's how you know he's from Philadelphia.
What did he have to say about it?
He I think he had on his gravestone, I'd rather be in Philadelphia or something like that.
I'm not talking shit. That's saying that's great.
No,
that's
no. Philadelphia. There was something about here it is. This is, it's actually a really great witticism. I once spent a year in Philadelphia, he said. I think it was on a Sunday. Fucking good. That's fucking good. He got us.
Yeah. Oh, you feel he burnt you.
He got us.
Blam.
I love his cookies, though.
His wife's cookies.
Yeah, Mrs. Fields. We watched the Goosebumps.
This is one of the worst Disney intros Plus. We've ever done.
This is fine. We've done worse than this.
If you're new to this show, we've done worse than this.
Sometimes we read books, but not lately. But this time
I also like how we're like, let's not let's not misquote Walt Disney on this podcast that also has talked about Goofy's Bread and Walt's Jack Shack.
That's true.
I like the commitment to authenticity we have here.
Dig back if you're new and find those, because there's some good stuff there.
Yeah.
Usually we do read the books, but today we're watching more of the new. I'm gonna get us there, guys.
Thank you.
We usually read the books, but today we're going back to the TV show, which we've watched the first episode of Disney's Hulu's Goosebumps.
Corporate sellouts.
And we watched episodes 2 and 3 this time, and we're going to talk about them so you can listen.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this, guys. I think I'm in.
Oh, really?
Ooh, I think I'm in.
I'm going to say this, guys. I think this is where I get out.
Wow. Okay. And to if you hadn't listened to the first episode, I think we were all in after that first episode, right?
I thought you guys were both out last time, and I was the only one in, I thought.
I said that I was wavering between leaving it at that first episode and watching more. And after this like pair of episodes, I'm like, oh man, this feels really different from the first episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think,
that's
like the famous, I think, and Chad, you'll know this best. Like, I don't know if there's something to the analytics of TV shows that caused this, but there is a decided change in tone typically after episode one of a show, which I think makes sense because typically the first one is directed by the showrunner and then it moves into the kind of the other people who are going to direct the other episodes. But then I find that episodes 2 and sometimes 3, but very rarely, usually it's just 2, kind of carry along. They usually have the higher production values. They usually have a little bit more of setup, which I think episode 2 of this does. And then you kind of get into the episode doldrums for when you're on a lesser show, the episode doldrums kind of hit for like 3, 4, 5. And then you usually get a little bump for 6 and 7. And then you get a brief doldrums for 8 and 9. And then you usually get a bump for 10.
This guy's watched episodes of
this. This guy's watched some TV. I mean, Paul, as an official TV analytical man, I can say that sounds correct.
It just feels like that's kind of how it's like, because you have to write 10 episodes, right? And it's like, or 12.
Or whatever the algorithm dictates that year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that, I don't know, man. I don't know if maybe these stories are not meant to be told in that many episodes.
That's such an interesting take, because I feel like the individual episode stories on all of these have been so minor that I felt that way about first episode with Say Cheese and Die, and with these two episodes with The Haunted Mask and Cuckoo Clock of Doom, they feel like they are doing the episodic premise for about 25% of it.
Yeah, very, very true. It's because the episodic premise is happening to one character, but we're still bopping into the other characters' lives to see what's going on with them, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I mean, it was established in the pilot, and now we have the second one, which I love the term a repilot, where you really are resetting the tone and you're hopefully building off of what those cool ideas that made a studio go, yes, we want more of this pilot.
Ah, so is that how they're kind of written? Are they kind of written as like a sort of, is that why the second episode tends to be also pretty interesting and then the drop off happens after that?
Oh, that's, I mean, I'm just guessing. I think sometimes the shows write are like, oh, someone wrote this original pilot and we picked it up and now we want the rest of the series. Or the pilot went through so much development and it was you know, worked on for so long that it almost was like baked differently.
Might also just be a symptom of assigning an arbitrary number of episodes to a work rather than letting the work breathe for itself.
That's what I really think it is. And I don't mean to say that your episode 3s are always going to be bad. I just think that, I think it's that point, Kevin, that arbitrary storytelling, it just, you have a lot of momentum in the pilot and I guess the repilot, right? Because you're like, in that momentum, you're finding interesting things happening and the characters feel very active. And then you kind of get into a little more reactive storytelling, it feels, for a couple episodes. It tends to go that way.
Yeah, I could follow it.
The rule for anime for a very long time was watch the first 3 episodes to decide whether or not you want to continue with it. Mm. Like, don't judge it based on the first one, because the first episode is often based on a one-shot pilot that somebody pitched.
Right.
And then it got picked up and then they reworked it or something. So, like, then the second episode, like, maybe still smacks of that. But the third episode, you're in the thick of it, and you can kind of see where you're going before you have to watch like 40 to like 2,000 episodes, whatever One Piece is on right now.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I think that kind of tracks how this is feeling, that by the end of the third episode, Cuckoo Clock, while the Cuckoo Clock was a nothing story, at least now it seems like the A plot across the book is pretty clear of, all right, if you didn't tell already, Thomas Biddle, Harold Biddle.
Harold Biddle.
Wow, you really can't uncouple that in your mind from Harry Potter, can you?
Is that where I'm getting that from? Biddle?
Yeah, you're thinking of Tom Riddle from Harry Potter, which is...
Okay, like, maybe that's what I was going to ask the podcast listeners of. I am so sure, we said this last time, I'm so sure that Biddle is a name from Goosebumps.
Nope,
Harry beforehand. Potter. But I can't find, yeah, well, if I Google Biddle Goosebumps, all I'm getting is everything from the current show.
Right.
It had to have been in a previous book. There has to be a name they're pulling from something. And it wasn't Say Cheese or Die like I thought it was. Old guy's name was Spider. So I don't know where that name is from.
Spider's the guy who was murdered in the first book of this, of the real series, the main series.
The real series.
He
Let's
was
call it that, the real.
Murdered by children. Let me clarify that. I've been ringing that bell for years.
Just pointing. It's Paul just pointing. And again, murdered by children.
Murdered by children. The rest of the series. You needed a repilot after that. Am I right?
Damn. Can we talk about Izzy? I'm really excited to talk about Izzy.
Yeah,
I think Izzy's my favorite character on the show.
Okay, so Izzy's a troll, which is wild.
Yeah.
Your favorite character is the troll?
My favorite character is the troll. Because that's very... One, she's channeling RL with these fucking put-down insults.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're Kevin, they're slappy insults.
This is Yossified RL.
Yeah, Yoss...
Wow.
It's Yoss slappy.
Wow. That's a nightmare. That in yeah. itself is the Gen Alpha slappy.
Izzy rules. She tells it like it is. She's very honest online.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Kevin. No, you can't be championing trolling.
I love her relationship with her brother, who's also an awesome character and a not annoying little kid character.
Yeah.
All right. I cannot. My sarcasm detector is broken at this moment, Kevin.
Oh no. So that was genuine. I do think. Izzy's brother. I think Alan.
I don't remember his name. Yeah.
It's Alan.
Alan, okay.
And if it's not,
it's Alan now.
Fucking tell me about it. I don't know where, because Twitter doesn't exist anymore. So,
You can go to our Discord by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuzz.
tell us when we're wrong.
If you want to correct me, you gotta pay.
It's Alan. I hate to break this to you. He's in one episode. We watched it.
Oh, that was it.
That's fine. He was great.
Why not kill the kid at least to raise some stakes?
He's a kid. He's a kid. You can only work. W.C. Fields said, don't live in Philadelphia and don't work with kids.
Don't work with children and go to Philadelphia.
I don't know what he sounds like, but I think Chad nailed it.
I am just, to be clear, in case anyone listens, I am just quoting On Cinema's impression of W.C. Fields.
Oh, thank you.
I'm assuming that's what he sounds like.
Excellent. Yes.
So I've noticed this a lot in adaptations of media that are pitched at both millennials and Generation Z, and mm-hmm. maybe also Gen Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
But the troll character has been examined a few times so far. I'm thinking like Clone High has a character named Topher Buss, who mm-hmm. is sort of this kind of up close and personal examination of the troll mindset, because we really want to imagine who the person is behind the mean comments. I think like that is supposed to be appealing. I hate this idea. I don't like humanizing people who are mean on the internet.
I don't like it either, but you know, it is like a main boogeyman for that generation.
It's a person in your neighborhood. Like,
yeah, it's the bully.
Anyone could be the troll.
Yeah,
right. It's the bully. It's the high school bully, but now it's online. Right. I thought so. Izzy, just to catch anyone up who might not be fully following along with the show, in the first episode, we see Isabella's character multiple times. She's filming things typically for the football team. And she's constantly ignored, and she's basically ignored through the entire episode. And in episode two, we're now caught up with her perspective, which I don't know if you noticed this, guys, but some symbolism. When she's standing to the side and she blows up, what's her name? Allison, I believe. Allison's party. She rats it out. She's standing in front of a sign that says, "No bullying zone."
Yeah, I also wrote down "No bully zone." Hell yeah. Notes. I wrote down "No bully zone." I was like, hee hee hee.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Isabella, who feels invisible, lashes out by using the pseudonym "Your Favorite Troll," which I honestly think that's too on the nose for a troll name. I feel like most internet trolls don't just say "I'm a troll," because then that's like
they don't view themselves as a troll, right?
Well, yeah, that also kind of gives the game. If you're just saying "I'm just trolling," then you're like, well, then that takes the heat out of what you're trying to do. You're trying to hurt them.
But we're trying to have it both ways with Isabella, because I think she is cool. We see her, you know, wake up and immediately go to her phone and start being mean. But we also see her be nice in real life to her little brother, like right off the bat, like, you know, she's helping him with breakfast and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, man, people are complicated, but not for long.
Yeah, because she goes to school.
We need to move.
Yeah, she goes to school. She blows up Allison's party. And then I think we pick back up at home. And I need to comment on this costume scene Isabella's little brother comes in. Alan comes in with a container with her old Dracula costume that she has.
What do they call it? Like a lady vampire?
Vampress, I believe.
And I was like, great. We didn't need to gender vampire. You can just be a Dracula.
It's a Dracula.
You're a Dracula.
Alan is wearing a surgeon outfit covered in blood. Guys, for me, this was an incredibly shocking moment because the year where I realized I was too old to be in a costume was the year that I dressed up as a surgeon dressed in blood and I went too hard. And it was the year that I learned that Halloween is about not trying too hard, but trying just enough.
Oh, like you went to a party and people were put off by you? Is that what you're saying?
I was out trick-or-treating. I was probably like 12, and we had grown up that summer, and I didn't know.
I'm picturing young Paul in a bloody surgeon's outfit. It's making me smile.
I was sweaty as hell, and the cool kids showed up, and they were like, "What are you wearing?" And I was like, "Oh no, adulthood has come for me."
Oh no, you're trying too hard. We don't like that.
Yep.
You should have just said blood.
Blood. Your blood.
Isabella's at this party as a vampress.
Yeah, Izzy goes to the party anyway, because why the hell not? No one pays attention to her because no one ever pays attention to her. Not even the adults in her life who are constantly failing her.
That ties into what I think is actually the most... There are two layers of interest in this show that I think elevates this beyond anything that a single Goosebumps book has ever been. And that's why I'm in. And we'll get there.
Wow. Okay.
Anyways.
Are you going to tell those two? Are you going to say those two things? Or are we just going to tease the two?
We'll tease them because I think we can talk about them at the end of this episode.
I'm excited, Paul, because I want you to pull me back over, because I know I'm probably going to have to watch more episodes of this. So I want you to pull me back into the show.
All right.
She hears her name being called by a mysterious voice, and not having anything better to do, she goes into the basement.
That's a good point.
Just impressed wildly that anyone knows her name.
I just want to call it, the point that she's being invisible to everyone's point is people have been walking into her. So yes, there's a little bit of rudeness to it, but she's not even trying at this party. She immediately goes, "Well, might as well try dark witchcraft. I'll go down to this basement."
And, I mean, mood. I've been like, that's just
Kevin. You are feeling this character. You are into Izzy.
The troll stuff is a little fucked up, but it's not like she's, you know, doxing anyone.
didn't she legitimately dox someone by pointing out the party? Wouldn't that count as doxing?
Well, anyway, moving on.
So far, Izzy, James, and I'm coming around on Isaiah. Isaiah's winning me over a little bit.
Isaiah was my number one before this episode, and Isaiah's down to two, because I just like Izzy. I just think she's cool.
Yeah.
She finds the mask, and she puts it on, and suddenly she has CG eyes, and she's the life of the party.
Is that what happened?
Is that CG?
I think so, because her eyes are really well lit, and it's, a mask like that
It's surreal.
Yeah.
But I think the mask design is creepy.
Yeah.
I think it looks cool on her face, and I kind of like it with the eyes. I think
it's a little Jabberwocky.
Yeah.
It's a little Jabberwocky. It's a little Dark Souls boss.
Yes, which I think is what I dug about it.
I think I liked the spookiness of the design. I thought the scene when she then came up the steps, reborn as the Mask Vampress.
Yeah.
That's not her title, just what she's doing. Everyone at the party can't stop looking at her. And I don't know, there was something about the way it was being played where like, and she's kind of sexy now. She's running her fingers across Isaiah's chest. I'm like, she looks horrifying. She looks like the baby monsters from Nothing But Trouble.
She looks like a cult member from the Eyes Wide Shut cult.
Yeah, she looks like the art from Phyrexian Unlife, a Magic the Gathering card. I think it's funny that Isaiah, everyone wants to do him. I think it's funny because it shows kind of what a dork he is, like, at heart. Like, everyone's, like, trying to get a piece of him, and he's just like, I'm going to be really stoic about this and freeze up.
Yeah, I think he's treated pretty well. Like, he is cool, he is liked, but he's not really that cool. And he's like, a nice guy. He's just
It shows that a lot of people think of him more as a prop for whatever, like, they're trying to accomplish. Like,
very interesting.
Izzy's trying to, like, become the life of the party and become this sexy mystery person, and she does that by going to Isaiah and doing a weird little dance around him while his girlfriend looks on kind of into it,
because
she also dances with her, and it's like, okay, like interesting.
Issa's the name of the actress. Margot wants to be close to Zach again. She wants to feel like he likes her more than just using her. James everybody wants to be seen by Isaiah, right? Like everybody's vying for Isaiah's gaze to a certain extent.
I don't like him. I'll say it. I don't like Isaiah. I think he's pretty flat.
But... Wow. Did you know an Isaiah on the football team, Chad?
I mean, I was on the football team, so I knew all of those guys, and I thought there was like three good ones. But anyway,
Isaiah feels like he feels like he's a nice change in the jock trajectory.
I feel like whoever like was the backup QB is like fucking stoked right now.
Oh
like...
yeah,
we haven't covered that. That is. I should actually be relating to Isaiah. Can I tell a Chad football story for 30 seconds?
Chad's football corner, na-na-na.
Like Isaiah, I had a similar thing where my chances of any sort of college scholarship were robbed in a freak accident.
Oh, no.
Isaiah's, as seen in the first episode, was he got spooked by a zombie
flame face, yeah.
Yeah, flame face and a bunch of zombie undead football people who made him break his arm, and he was going to require him to be out for the rest of the season when all the scouts would have seen him. Mine was that my senior year, there was a little bit of heat on me. I'd not had a good junior year. Scouts were coming out to check me out, bought some college scholarships. Really, really needed that. And our first game of the season, our stupid idiot coach, who was a dum-dum, made us spend an hour before the game taking photos posed in front of his red Corvette because he wanted that to be like the team senior photo that we would put up everywhere.
Did that give you the yips?
Well, no, I have too much gas. No, it was, we spent so long that we were then late to the game, so we didn't get a chance to stretch or do any warm-ups.
Oh, no.
So I think first play of the game, I run the ball up the middle and get a... sounds like I'm bragging. I get an 80 yard touchdown.
Did you pull a hammy
on cold taffy?
I pulled all of my groin.
Oh, cold taffy snapped.
Cold taffy,
and
dude.
Was out for the rest of the season on a pull, like a real bad pulled groin. And that was the end of Chad's football career. But so I identify with Isaiah. Right?
Like, yeah.
That sucks to have that taken away from you.
It would
this
be
is a better.
It would be better if he had an injury that was more realistic and more. Well, I guess it's like fitting because he's a QB that his arm got broke. But like,
yeah,
They should also have thrown in a, and your groin's pulled because, you know.
Because you ran away. Tell. You ran away from so many fire zombies so quickly. Yeah.
You didn't stretch beforehand. You pulled your groin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for being so hard on Isaiah. I just, he's too generic for me right now. But you know what? He is more fun than a normal, typical cliche.
Give him some time. Player. Let him grow on you a little bit.
Yeah. Chad. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. So Izzy's hot. She's kicking ass.
She's so hot with her mask.
She goes home and, oh shit, the mask won't come off. Yes, it does. Good call back to the fake outs in Goose. That's a good way to do it, I think. Like a little bit of a hair tussle.
A little nod. But also, I think, and again, I think this is episode two worked for me because episode one was almost precisely the book, right? Of the camera takes the picture and then
sure.
and a bad thing happens. And in fact, it's honestly a little neutered by the book because again, people are murdered with the camera in the end of the first book and not in the first episode of the show, which honestly puts it on a weak footing to start. You know, start with murder.
Start with murder and don't work with children.
Exactly. He always said it.
Everything begins and ends with murder, children. W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields.
Eat my cookies.
Eat them.
Eat my poison cookies, children. Murder.
This one's interesting because you're expecting the mask to be stuck on her face, as it was in the book, and it doesn't, and it gives you the fake out. But then I think what's interesting is the masks, ultimately, it isn't about it's being stuck on her face. It's about it being stuck on her soul. And
Paul.
And it adheres to her soul and poisons her from within. And I think it's so interesting. I love that shot where she takes it off and it has the smile on it. I thought that was a good shot. It was a little creepy.
That was a fun shot. Yeah. That actually should have been the title sequence. That should have been the cold open, not a minute earlier.
Okay. All right.
Minor nitpick.
Wasn't that the cold?
No, oh, no, it was like, it was everything up until, and then there was like goosebumps, and then there was
we didn't talk about how this starts with Halloween in an orange font, just kind of really like lingering in the center. I was like, what? Is this a title? I didn't realize what it was trying to do. It was trying to
send us back in time.
Yeah, well, it was trying to Marvel, not Cold War.
Infinity War, yeah.
Yeah, it was trying to Infinity War. This is the setting. Okay, let's move.
Put us in space. Yeah, put us in time and space. Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
So they do that in order to, temporarily reset us, I guess, for the repilot. And
Civil War. Sorry, Civil War.
Yeah, he's right. All of the those two guys, those two directors who did Civil War
and Infinity, and they did.
I was supposed to say the Jonas, the Russos. They loved that giant text that just tells you new location. That was
you are here. Text. Let's move on.
Yeah. Brooklyn.
Yes.
Space.
Yes.
Kevin's watched some Marvel movies that he hasn't talked about before. Uh-oh. I think Kevin's seen Civil War.
I have friends and have to participate in conversation.
Culture demands Kevin's presence.
I guess if I want to interact, I gotta participate.
So Izzy's soul is poisoned by the mask. So we take a brief break. And so here we get away from our 25% story. And we get some great Justin Long physical comedy, because at the end of the first episode, Justin Long was poisoned by Harold Biddle's spirit. He entered.
Yeah. He vored Harold Biddle. Let's just say what happened.
Yeah, he vored him.
This makes me uncomfortable, just in general. I'll lay it out there. Just Justin Long stumbling around with half a child inside.
an angry child.
Yeah.
Who likes to eat worms and chocolate.
So I'm just was so perplexed by this because I understand what's going on, right? He's possessed and it's like fighting him, and you see Justin going, he's waking up, which I don't mind. Last time we saw Justin Long, he raised his head and smiled sinisterly. Mm-hmm. And then this episode, we're catching up to him and he's waking up on the floor in the exact same spot, which means unless nothing else happened, Harold Biddle took over Justin Long
and then fell
made
asleep.
A creepy grin and went, time to go back to sleep now, and then just laid down on the ground.
Or abandoned him like a car in Grand Theft Auto and then got
just jumped out for a second. He just can't walk, I guess, because like, is Tom Harold fighting him? Is that what's happening? Like, it just, like, the ghost is like, no, no, right leg now. And
yeah,
and
I think it's, it seems to be implying that he has some ability to fight back against Harold Biddle's possession, right?
If this role was going to rely so much on physical comedy and pratfalls, like, then I think he should have gotten a different actor.
Yep.
And
I liked his physical comedy acting. I thought he was doing
it. I was so bored by it. Okay. I was like, I get it. Your right leg trips. Like,
yeah, it was just, it was very silly, and it didn't feel, it felt like it stuck out, and it was like, this is all about Justin Long. Like, this, like, he is in the center of the frame at all times.
I agree. You get Justin Long in this is, they're like, go do your thing, buddy.
And I don't think you can put that on his shoulders. I think and I don't think we're going to keep up with this physical comedy thing. I thought it was disrespectful to physical comedy, which
all of the greats, W.C. Fields, who I assume did physical comedy, Chevy Chase.
If you have to put me in pretentious jail forever for that sentence, I understand, but that's, I cannot mute the cry of my soul. Like, I've seen good physical comedy, and that was, you know, I could tell he's taking the 102 class.
I'll say this, Kevin, more like Laurel and Hardly, right?
Oh, wow. Shit. Wow. God damn, some burners on this one.
I overblew that for the podcast, Paul, but I actually did find that very funny.
Thank you.
Did we see, I feel like we're missing a transitional moment. Maybe I just missed the shot.
We're not. Where I've got 2.5 pages of notes. We're not even through the first half of my notes right now.
Wow.
I'm so sorry. The part where Biddle shifts, it seems like at some point Biddle takes control of Justin Long.
Yeah, it's in the bathroom he does that.
That's when he splashed in the water and he looks up and sees the face. Because for the rest of the, he's just then, it's just Biddle.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why we did any of that shit other than listen Justin Long explore the space.
I think it's, I'm assuming later we're going to have him fight back against the possession, right?
Maybe, yeah, he'll expel him. He's like, no, I'm a good teacher.
Yeah.
I love kids and not underage girls. And
oh my God, I knew it was coming.
Sorry.
You resisted for a while, Chad.
Good job. I
held on for a long time.
Honestly proud of
but
you.
But there are going to be a lot of opportunities for that kind of joke.
I know. But like the part where, for whatever reason, Nathan Bratt, the teacher, Justin Long's character, dresses up like a referee to go spook Isaiah?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. He's a spooky guy.
Like he put on a uniform and then like showed up in the locker room just to be like, hey, good seeing you. All right, well, I'm going to leave. What was that about?
Justin Long's having a good time.
I'll zoom us through some of the plot if we want.
Yeah, okay. I don't have much until the transformation. So go on.
Isaiah and Margot have trouble talking about what actually happened. Margot wants to reset and be like, hey, I'm sorry I pushed you away. You seem really freaked out there. What happened? And he's like, nah, I don't want to talk about it. And he will later. Then Isabella's got a very expensive drone that she's doing shots of the football team practicing with. And she leaves it unattended to go help Isaiah out with something. They have a very nice moment where Isaiah calls her Susan or something. Mm-hmm. And she's like, my name isn't Susan. You don't even know my name. And Isaiah like says, I'm sorry. That's messed up. And like he genuinely apologizes it and turns it into a joke. And it's a nice moment between them. And then fucking Lucas, who we learn his dad's dead. So I guess we have to put up with whatever shit he's pulling.
But that's why he acts up.
Yeah, like so far Lucas's character has been nothing but chaos. And it stinks that we have to, it feels like they have to have this drone sequence in here almost as a way to keep peppering Lucas in, because we know he's coming in Go Eat Worms, right?
Lucas is also important because we're setting up a class drama kind of in the background with the parents.
There's a little bit of a class drama, and I think really, and I'm just going to drop my thesis about the whole season load right now.
Yeah.
So we do learn about, I shouldn't have said it that way.
No, you're cool.
Kevin, leave that in.
So I'm not going to say it any other way, so it has to stand.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we got.
That's what we got. That's the take.
Yep.
his parent is dead. Isabella's father is absent, and her mom seems to be working as a nurse and is very busy as well. We have Isaiah's parents, who are putting unfair expectations upon him, and also there's a little bit of a class thing, right, where it's like they don't have the money to pay for his college education. And then we have Nora's she is a part of the dead father aspect for Lucas. And then we also have our main character-ish, I guess, maybe not main, but Margot and her parents, who are going through a divorce. And all of these children are having their own ways of acting out because of what their parents have done to them.
Yeah, it kind of, I know, like, this is trying to say something important about, like, generational trauma, which, like, seemingly every fucking thing wants to say something about generational trauma.
Sure.
And I guess it's important to explore. But, like, I don't know how this ends other than being like, yeah, our parents are horrible people, or... wow, our parents really said sorry. All is forgiven.
Right, right. I don't know how it's going to end well, but I do think that they're setting it up that, but I think I like that it's working on sort of two layers of, like, well, maybe not even two layers. Maybe it's all interrelated, but obviously all of their parents did something to Harold, right? And they're all of their problems that they are now passing down through these things of divorce, being absentee, being an alcoholic. All of these things seem to be related to what they did back in the day. And so now their past actions are haunting them. And then that haunting is creating them, or is creating a situation between them and their children that is separating them from them. So I think that is interesting because it's more context and more of a chance for people to grow than any Goosebumps book has ever given any of its main characters. And I think that is interesting. Yeah.
Yes, but it is also too many characters for two episodes of TV.
Yeah, I do wish if there was a way that this story had kind of unfolded where we didn't have to spend, if the Halloween night wasn't the impact of everyone, and you just let there be spooky things in this town that didn't all come from one night of five kids having a party. So that we could, I think it actually did Isabella a service that we barely saw her in the first episode.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, well, we kind of spent some time with Lucas and we kind of spent some time with Margot, but, like, all of them aren't being fully served as much as if we had just focused on these smaller stories.
Yeah, sadly, we're in the part of Game of Thrones where there are way too many characters and no character gets to really have an episode. They get to have their episode about them because this one is about Isabella and the next one is about James, but... like you said, Chad, to your point, it's only like 25% about them.
Like,
right?
Like Isabella's story with the mask is like mostly over. Doesn't she get rid of the mask like halfway through?
No, I think it's close to the end, but there is stuff after it, I believe.
Well, she only puts on the mask once, but well, twice. But we're coming up on the guidance counselor scene, which I think is my second favorite. I like the Isaiah Izzy because it's my two favorite characters having a moment together, but we don't really get to see two characters just kind of play off each other like that.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I know we were taking forever on this. Can we talk about just one thing I wanted to bring up about
this better the be drone foot?
I think it's good observation. The drone footage.
Yeah.
We learn Isabella shoots the football games on a drone for the football team, but it's her own drone.
Right.
And she seems to be doing this, even though she's in the AV club, on her own dime. It's her parents' own expensive $3,000 drone.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's two things about that. One, when they get to the guidance counselor and they negotiate what Lucas will do, Lucas says he'll pay her $5 a week to pay it off. And everyone goes, okay, great, fine, except for Isabella. That's insane. The school should have paid for that drone at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one, it shows like there is a money gap in this town. I think that's very interesting. And like, it's not a very big deal for Isabella. It just gets her in trouble with her family.
True.
Who seem to be decently well off, but are suffering as a family unit because of that, probably because their parents are working way harder than they need to in order to live that lifestyle. Whereas you see James, whose mom is around, but is just is seems to, I don't know what the deal with, I don't know if they've talked about his dad at all. His family's rich as well, and we've seen him throughout the series being a rich kid, right? But his mom is there, but she's an alcoholic, so it's a different kind of problem.
Man, with, she's just fun.
She's a fun
guys.
Mom. Yeah.
She's just fun momming, all right?
I want to clarify, I'm not advocating for Lucas to be sent to debtor's prison. I understand his mom is running an awful-looking restaurant on the docks. It can't have
there?
That
That's
much
charming.
Business.
It's just cloudy. It's just overcast. It's the only problem with that location.
I can't imagine you're getting a lot of foot traffic in that spot.
That's true.
Is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. They have customers in there. It's not. It doesn't seem to be doing the worst.
The customers of the store are the five characters who have gone to her to talk to her about things. But I know what you mean. what I want, less important but more importantly, I want to talk about the fact that...
Well, that's her
I
angle, Chad, is that she's firmly embedded herself in the town's mysteries, so you have to come to her cafe to find out about them.
You got to get her egg sandwiches, and, yeah. And Justin Long is like, I really want an egg Sammy, and she's like, okay.
Okay, but this guidance counselor scene...
No, but so the drone footage, Kevin...
We've been talking about this drone footage forever.
This
what
drone,
about the drone
footage is so fascinating to me because... It made me realize and remember that in the first episode, I know we're reviewing second and third, but in the first episode, Isaiah has a freak out and sees a vision that goes on for at least a minute where he runs the opposite direction on the field as he runs away from evil zombie football people
mm-hmm.
and freaks out and then gets pinned and tackled and breaks his arm. You're telling me, one, that drone footage must have been amazing to watch. And it's
we
a
don't,
real shame
we don't know. We don't know that she had the drone for that game. We see...
She said so. She's like, I record every game, right?
Well, she does it with other cameras, yeah.
She didn't say with the drone, and the footage she shows him later is clearly from the side of the field, not drone footage.
Oh, I guess I was thinking for some reason she was shooting with the drone. I was like, that's very fancy.
You son of a bitch, Chad. We wasted 10 minutes.
No, but... That footage on whatever camera and ever medium it was recorded on, you're telling me that would have been all over the local news for like a week? Is like little high school football chat. He made the local news sometimes with a good play. You finish your game, you go home on WSBT at 8 o'clock. Someone's showing the football highlights, and you get to see yourself.
I love this peek into your past. This is cool.
I actually have an answer for this, Chad, and you're not going to like it.
You're telling me the newscasters weren't like, meanwhile at the Titans game. QB Isaiah Bradley had a real panic attack and pooped his pants in front of everybody.
My dad works in local news, and basically what goes on the news is no longer charming local stories unless
True.
It's a fire or something like that. It's what are people tweeting about? What's on TikTok right now?
Yes, sure. Like, what did the Associated Press send to the affiliate to put on the TV? I understand that.
Yeah, that segment kind of ate up any like small town human interest story that would make local news. And also, there are no newspapers anymore. So,
media consolidation, man.
Yeah,
we're doomed.
Okay, just want to point out that there's footage somewhere that'd be very funny to watch of Isaiah running from zombie men.
Well, maybe she hasn't released it, too, because she has it in the media room, and she shows him. She cues it up for him, but maybe she's being a little bit of a sweetheart for it.
Maybe she's holding on to it.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to get out. I thought that was interesting.
It is, Chad. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this guidance counselor scene...
Which is related to the drone footage.
Come on, Rob Hubel, give us absolutely nothing in this scene. Go for it.
I think he's a good punching bag for Izzy to tear into. Mm-hmm, like, I like that she kind of explodes. I mean, Lucas doesn't really deserve it. He is kind of, you know, I wouldn't have been his friend in high school because he seems insane.
Mm-hmm.
That aside, him Izzy laying into the guidance counselor for being a useless waste of skin, I think is awesome. and he just kind of takes it. He just kind of takes, which is like really fucked up that he's just like, yeah, I am weak and stupid and I'm cheating on my wife and I suck. And a child just told me this at work.
Yeah, he's got some loathing going on for sure.
Yeah. They really ripped into that.
It's a harsh scene, and it is to your point, Kevin. It is it's setting up sort of the class differences. It's setting up the anger at the generation above them a little bit.
It's also pointing at maybe like guidance counselor, whatever his name is taking Lucas's side because, you know, he's having a thing with his mom.
A nice understated performance by Rob Hubel. I just wanted
a real bunt to first base by Rob Hubel.
I did, Chad. I actually had no strong opinions about that, but I wanted to be contrarian now because
I know you did.
Then we have the referee bit. Is there anything more to say on the referee bit other than it's?
Don't know why he put on. Is Biddle fucking with him? Is like Biddle like this will really scare you? Reminding you of the camera. I don't know.
It's very like Bugs Bunny or Law Random.
I was gonna say he's gone the mask mode at this point. You know.
It's like, is it Beetlejuice powers or something? Or
he is wearing Beetlejuice's colors.
Oh, he's wearing black and white. Oh my god. Beetlejuice is just a referee of the undead.
He's the devil referee.
Izzy gets in trouble for the drone's death at the hands of Lucas, of Nowhere Lucas. Shout out to the Book of Names. And I think about the phrase Nowhere Lucas a lot. And she gets her phone and laptop taken away by her mom. She just doesn't understand. She's too busy. She works hard to give her kids a good life, but that doesn't mean that she's involved in it.
Right.
Also, don't give your kids a drone. Just don't ever give your kids a drone. You know what? Don't do it.
Yeah, don't trust a teenager with anything worth $3,000.
No.
$3,000?
That's on her, honestly.
Yeah.
You could buy a person on the black market for $3,000. Don't give
I don't know the value of a person, but I'm going to take your word for it, Chad.
What actually happens next is Nora Lucas's mom goes and tries to talk to Isaiah. Yeah, Chad?
No, I'm picturing the graph you showed us last time of just like all of the names and the circles and the arrows. I'm like, I should have done this. I also kept getting caught up.
It's too much, man.
It is four families, but honestly, it's a lot.
Nora solved it already, basically. She's like, Biddle's coming for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one's listening to her.
Yeah.
She gives a picture of Biddle to Margot because she can't talk to Isaiah because while he was putting the garbage out one-handed, his dad was like, don't talk to my son, please. And then she was like, all right, bet. And she walks away and she is like, hey, can you talk to his son for me? And gives Margot a picture. And then Margot gives Isaiah the picture and says, have you seen this dude? And Isaiah's like, oh my God, yeah. And Margot goes, I did some research. How? What? What do you mean?
Yeah, I wanted to note, did she reverse image search it or something?
Yeah, did you reverse image search Biddle's face to find like stuff? Disney Plus is doing a Goosebumps? Interesting.
It says, look at this photograph.
Look at this photograph.
It's a kid that I killed in the 90s.
Yeah, did they kill this kid? Like, they killed this kid.
I mean,
I know we know they killed this kid, but like...
Through bullying, yes.
We don't know yet. I'm still very confused what happened in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know how these parents bounce back from this.
Which is, I think, an intriguing enough mystery to make me want to carry through.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't. Maybe all the parents die at the end and set their children free.
Ooh.
Maybe that's how we solve generational trauma. Kill the olds.
Culling death to all of them.
Wendy Williams. Did you notice that in one of these episodes, I think James was like, she is the icon and she is the moment, which is a Wendy Williams reference.
I didn't realize that. I don't know my Wendy Williams lore enough beyond.
It's like they watch this show or listen to this show or turn on the TV and Goosebuds is playing on the TV.
Yeah.
We should be in season two. Please put us in season two.
We should. Can we get a cameo? Can we get a cameo in there?
Voice cameo. Yeah, I mean, I don't need to be face, just voice.
I don't have an argument for why we'd be good on this show, but it'd be funny.
I mean, the McElroys did that whole thing about being in Trolls 2, and they had nothing to fucking do with Trolls 2.
But they were persistent, and we'll forget about this. We've got other stuff going on. So I Margot gets the picture, gives it to Isaiah. He recognizes it. She says, "I did some research." I laughed and wrote down that phrase because it's.
She did her own research.
And then the mask calls again to Izzy. I forget what makes her put it on, but it turns her face into a vampire troll Nosferatu face.
Can I say that I'm so dumb I didn't get what why the mask was the mask what it was until the mask said, like, "You'll always be a troll." And I was like, "Oh, it's a fucking troll head." I thought it was just like... I thought it was like a weird old man or something. Yeah. I don't know what that. Yeah.
I thought it was a goblin at
first. Yeah, it was more of a goblin.
Yeah, I thought it was that at first. And then I realized it was the troll. But it looks like the mask from the original one a little bit too.
A little bit.
I thought they were doing a little bit of a Nosferatu thing with it.
Like, yeah, I mean, if you look at the Nickelodeon mask, it's got a. If I were to guess that, I don't know if they molded that mask for that episode, but it looks like it was from like an overstock of a vampire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'll send you a picture.
I don't think this is the most iconic design. It's just kind of, yeah, I guess that's what the mask would do to her face. Like, it's functional enough. We don't really see it in detail too much. It's a decent effect. It's not like scary though. It's just kind of like weird.
It's gross. The fingers are gross. She grows long, pointy fingernail fingers.
Did you ever see what the monster they revealed was going to look like in Bird Box? Remember Bird Box during the pandemic?
I do remember it. I never saw the character.
And it was like kind of like a scary old baby, but it wasn't scary. It was funny, and that's why they didn't show it.
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
Is Bird Box like Letterboxd, but for birds? Are you trying to get me into another app?
Yeah, Bird Box was like, hey, you know a silent place where they couldn't say anything? What if they couldn't see? And that was kind of the entire hook of Bird Box.
Whoa.
Pass.
Wait, how does that make a good movie?
Apparently it didn't.
How does that make for good visual media?
You don't want to see Sandra Bullock just stumbling around with a blindfold for 2 hours?
Jesus. What makes her put the mask on? Does anyone remember?
It speaks to her. Yeah. And I believe... I can't remember what it is that's occurring at this moment now. I should have wrote that down in my notes.
I think she's getting revenge on Lucas.
Yeah, I think she has everything taken away from her, and she's like, we're going to... Basically, it has been cloyingly luring her in this whole time and giving her powers, right? And in each moment... She kind of does. She stands up for herself, and each time acts confident at the party. She speaks up for herself when Lucas is a dickhead to her. And then now she's like, well, now I'm gonna, you know, I've had everything taken away from me. I'm gonna go get revenge, and pure chaos mode breaks out now, right? So she goes, and Lucas is trying to skateboard, and she attacks him, and she has. She has troll strength now. She has full on troll strength. She throws him. She breaks a skateboard in half. And then Isaiah and Margot show up just in time to scare her off, but they see her loping away like the troll she is into the
and
night.
And don't know who it is. No. They're just like, oh, you got attacked by a troll monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this should have had more consequences, to be honest, but...
Well, so then we do get the consequences. I don't know if there's a scene after this, but we ultimately get the consequences when she... I saw the picture of the thing from Bird Box, and it's stupid. Sorry, shouldn't look at pictures while I'm talking. She goes back home, and she's stuck in the mask now. Sorry, it's so stupid. It's fucking dumb.
he's like, I want rose. I want raisins.
Looks like he's holding in a fart really hard.
It looks like it's a fart and a warhead up top.
Yeah.
You know what? When Izzy attacked as the troll, she should have said airstrike, which would have been a drone reference.
You should have written on this first. You should have written on this first season, Chad. But here's the consequences of her actions. She's now stuck in the mask, right? She's stuck in the mask, and there is one person that she truly gets along with, and it's her little brother. And she lashes out at him. It almost hurts her little brother, and is only barely able to stop herself. By pulling
the
mask off.
She almost trolls her little bro.
She almost trolls her little bro. All of the inherited trauma and anger that has passed down through her is almost passed on to the only person and used to hurt the person that she, the only person she truly cares about and gets along with in this world.
She almost pranks her little bro.
She almost pranks her little, yeah.
In a frenzy, and she destroys the house, which...
Which is pretty messed up. But she realizes that she almost does this, and it's what's ultimately able to get her to stop. And I think thematically
I know
resonates.
You're in there.
I forgot about that line. That's not a good
I know
line.
You're
you gotta
in
stop.
There.
You gotta stop with all your trolling. The trolling that you've done once.
This ain't you. Don't make me shoot.
This is what we all want to say to the trolls in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a person. You're a person in some situations. Why can't you be one now?
We need to be dropping I know you're in there on YouTube comments. I know you're in there.
They aren't. No one's in there.
No, no one's in there. They're husks.
You were meant to be a troll. So yeah, she rips the mask off, which is very gross and good.
Yeah, yeah.
Her brother's like, "What do we tell mom and dad?" And she's like, "Oh, I don't know. Tell them a bear did it." And then they throw the mask. They throw the mask in a swamp, which I think is really funny. And then they shout at it to go to rotten hell, which
is cool and bad for a kid's show, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid's like, should we, kind of funny line is like, should we say a prayer or something as it rotten sinks hell? Into the water?
Yeah. They thought the rotten hell. It's cool. And it's a cool shot of it sinking into the water too. It's a little creepy because that mask is creepy. It's not iconic, but it's creepy. And they shout it down and they leave. And then, Justin Biddle shows up. Nathan Biddle shows up. Pained Nathan shows up. And
I guess he just has like object of power sense.
Yes.
Like one of his things are being used. He's like, he knows where it is.
Yeah, he just emerges from the woods whenever he needs to.
Yeah.
I guess we call him Brattle if he's halfway between Brat and Brittle or Biddle.
I like Brattle.
Okay, yeah, Brattle. Brattle's good.
The Brattleborg shows up.
Big bad Brattleborg.
Big bad Brattleborgs. we learned that Izzy doesn't get away with the bear lie. Her mom's rip shit at her for wrecking the house, and her mom has to go to some kind of parent meeting at James's wine mom's house, and she gets thrown in the pool room with James while the parents have an ominous conversation where they threaten. They threatened Nora with legal action.
Yeah, is that what they were doing there? I couldn't tell if it was legal action or murder.
They were like, hey, it's so easy to get your kid taken away from you.
Yeah.
Because you are saying that a ghost of a kid that they all were conspirators on the death of or something is crazy enough that Child Protective Services will immediately take your Mountain Dew swigging X Games boy away just because of that. But then they kept just talking about more like, it'd be a real shame for Lucas to grow up without his mother. Like, are you going to murder her? I feel like that's also like murder.
He's like 17. Like, he's already.
Yeah, he's got one more. He's got one more. By the time Cord got you away from him, he would be 18 anyway. So yeah. It was a weird threat.
It's a weird threat. And also, I think the statute of limitations is up, but I see why you'd want to like keep up appearances like your normal fucking people, I guess.
Yeah.
They just don't want anything about Biddle to come out.
Yeah, they did do murder by proxy
or something.
My money's still on they somehow summoned Slappy like a Final Fantasy summon, and they went, Slappy, go kill Biddle.
And he did.
And he did.
Slappy turned into a fire ghost and
he's like, okay.
And then Izzy skips a pool ball into James's face and he bursts like a balloon full of snot.
Absolutely hilarious ending to an episode.
Insane.
Just completely bonkers, unprompted and unexplained. And they're just like, deal with it. Go to episode 3, please. I love that.
And that's episode 3.
That's episode two. We made it through. I did not expect that to take us as long to get through. I really thought we were going to be able to do a double in one episode, but there was a lot to talk about there.
I think we're just good friends and we like talking to each other.
That's true.
Yeah.
I know that's true.
I'm glad we talked about the drone footage so much.
I like the drone footage segment. It's staying in.
Thank you.
Good. It's a good observation, Chad.
Our next episode, we understand on some basic level, as if we haven't already watched the episode, is about some sort of exploding goo boy. James, and we'll find out what that means on the next episode.
Well, they know we already watched it.
I think it's about a boy who can't keep exploding into goo.
If you like this episode and you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds and throw some dollars at us to join our Discord and get access to our secret Camp Goosebuds episodes that are all banter. If this was like the Wagyu steak of banter, marbled throughout with banter, then the Camp Goosebuds is just like a block of beef tallow.
It's a lard block.
It's just a big old lard.
You can just eat on that and feed on that for a whole week.
Yeah.
There are dozens upon dozens of Camp Goosebud episodes all available to you on patreon.com/goosebuds. And hey, you also might be like, the holidays are coming up. I need to express my love or care for the people around me with a gift. Mm. And their interests are specifically only this podcast and nothing else. Why don't you go over to goosebuds.store? We have the store up and going again. The domain is working. Goosebuds.store will take you to our Etsy page where we have some new items, some new options for colors, new types of merchandise. We got some sweaters, some cool new hats. You can wear that, and some people will think it's just cool Goosebumps merchandise and not even know about the podcast. It's a cool way to do it.
And all I have to do is go to goosebuds.store?
That's it. It'll redirect you to the Etsy page.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Also, if you're still looking for holiday gifts or whatever, check out book.spacekings.space to get yourself a copy of the physical Space Kings book and give it to somebody or give it to yourself. You deserve it. And hey, it's late November, and you know what that means? It means
it's fantasy month.
Fantasy month.
It is fantasy month, and fantasy month's running wild, dude.
How did we not get in trouble for using that song sooner? We haven't yet.
Well, you used a version.
That's true. Like,
you hit your tracks well.
We did do a good track time. Go check that out. If you want to see, if you want to see us skirt copyright law, go check out Fantasy Month.
Fantasy Month!
On YouTube, continue, question mark. You got some great new videos. I loved your World of Horror playthrough, which is only on the Patreon.
No, that one is public. If you would like, yeah, if you're looking for like a nice little spooky follow-up to this episode, we played a game called World of Horror, where you are in a Junji Ito type world with a little bit of visual novel / RPG style mechanics. It's a real fun time.
I want to check that out and watch it.
I'm gonna watch it again. I think that's been episode. We will cover more of this TV show, and we'll also be back with more Goosebump books, Horrorland series, Fear Street, another exciting things, Pete and Pete, that sort of thing. Yeah. Any last thoughts, boys?
No. End of episode.
That's it. We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our supporters in the Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
We'd like to thank these Patreon donors, like Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara,
Hollis Hornbeak,
Low Belly Hate Me,
Cameron Murphy Audio,
Michael McDowell,
Hey Josh Rob,
Mickey C,
Nathan Dolezal,
Mike Lanteri,
Buddy Morrill,
Alicade,
Mel Dipson,
Afshin,
Dango Twists,
Zenta Bumps,
Stealth Bates,
Robert Moon,
Brian Wells,
Jason Crooker,
Clay Castle,
Miguel Pardo,
John Keaty,
Calf.
Great news. Paranoia Shop just signed a $69 million deal with Spotify.
Oh God, I missed out on all that money.
The Juggalobalist,
Gregory D. Warren,
Cody Redfield,
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden prays that ice worshippers get fat stacks. Yeah.
Well, with that $69 million Spotify payout, you certainly did, Chad.
Prosperity Gospel!
Jar Jar Slinks.
Chosen One.
Levi Than.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Engman.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Christian Van Skeever.
Drew Applegate.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ Donator Comedio.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Andrew Jadzak just saw a Frostbiterians flyer. Come learn about the real truth of Kelvinist Absolute Zero. Light, frigid, refreshed.
All right.
A lot to take in there, Jads. We're going to have to read that one again for a couple months, I think.
Yeah, are they a splinter group? Are they us? I don't understand. Tell me more.
Lord Cornwallis.
Carson Birkenbean.
Murphy P.
Sean Minogue.
Tevin Ticklebean has a sock of loose eggs.
Are they boiled or are they just raw?
They're loose.
They're loose. They're not in the carton, at least. Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle it.
Luke LaFontaine.
Alicia Grafe.
Chip Handsome.
Matt McClellan.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misudelakis.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee, you can do it.
Sarah Kemp.
Jonas Blatterman.
Hold on, there's a cat blocking my computer. Ham _ Boat.
Raymond Hernandez.
The Crow Fans, but seasonal.
Matthew Sutton. Sorry, there's a cat still blocking my
computer. Hootie, get out of there. Jeffrey Owen Cahey.
I'm going to be cool uncle. Hootie, do whatever you want. Kelsey Kinneman.
She's going to.
Hootie, do drugs.
She's doing them. Russell Casberg.
Xavier Jimenez Castillo.
Chris Putrakis.
Scotty Pippen.
Alex Moon, the robotic dog.
Flemily.
Paul Grasso, believe in yourself.
Joe, regular name. Scott.
Dungeon Kappa, get a 401k.
Wow. Tobias Clark.
Ice Acolyte Hamster turns his cup of ice lava down.
Yes.
But it's ice lava, so isn't it ice?
Shit, I don't know what ice lava is.
Made you think. I think it's like a slushy.
Crap. Limp Duck.
Meat Virginia?
Luke Noodles.
Hugh Bolin.
Zambambino.
Estimena, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Chris, Spooky Gym Shorts and a 4XL t-shirt, Stiffy Nelson.
Woo. Damn.
Streak.
Nathan Remick.
Need More Kimchi.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Lee Wood.
Lamb.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Reed Stupendieck.
A Pair of Scots.
Joey Evans.
Levi Kidder. Achieve.
Get Nasty in the Wastebasket. I like that.
David Gray.
Carewise Gamgee.
Bryce Deury.
Matthew Brittato.
A Wild Swaggy YOLO Squire appears.
Cameron Hansen.
Tacky Tammy. Success!
Ma, the meatloaf!
You nailed the Will Ferrell there. Help, I'm trapped in the weird vent that Paul's mom's cat was trapped in. I can't get out.
I love that I know this is a British person's name that they put in.
Paul's mom.
Mums.
Mom's cat. Well, mom's cat.
Well, we closed off the vent, so sorry, you're stuck in there forever.
It's been sealed.
Jonas Annevoldsen.
B-b-b-bony.
Generally depressing.
The Deadly Bulb graduates.
Some of Chad's bird friends now live in the rafters of Ice Church. Thank you, Chad's bird friend children.
Come on down there. Come on down. Joe Gorman.
Ben Bohan.
Burgers overturned cup, _ boiling, _ free the entity.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about the entity, but I do believe in melting the ice.
Nicholas Maloney.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Thomas Jansis.
Anthony skips straight to the Book of Names.
Whoa.
Fuck yeah.
Lucretia McEvil.
Mutant Astronaut.
Henry Torbert. Text your mom.
Calamity Carl. Have a wonderful day.
Germ Juice. Call your girlfriend.
Whoa.
It's a Robin song.
Oh. I guess, yeah. Yeah.
Beauregard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bone Air. Don't fucking tell me what to do. That's another reference to Robin.
Adam Knapp.
Nick Johnson.
Logan Derby.
Brad Schmelzer.
Chick.
Ryan Carroll. Come pick me up. It's for Wendy's.
Jeremy Bowser. You can do it. You can get your license.
Callum, Mr. Misfire West. You put that gun away.
No misfires today. Not neither for you, Mandy Nasty.
Skeletorin, keep it up.
Dr. Diarrhea, keep those pants on.
Megan McCormick Mason, love your spices.
Ninja Bread Man.
Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds.
Helodicus Frenchlin.
Aaron Lord.
Nate Bit G, keep on drawing.
Dr. Chalk.
Boss Garrison, let the hostages go.
Mr. Unimportant wants to know if you could pee on the ice church floor. Only if your pee's hot.
Only in a certain corner.
Ryan R. Davis, you have 72 hours to comply.
Scott Waple, your clothes, give them to me.
Rocco.
Omegal Bagel, a.k.a. Omegal Bagel, a.k.a. George, a.k.a. Josh.
Hi, Josh.
Keep on zealoting.
Robot Arita.
Evdog.
SSJ Trogdor.
Llama Lad.
Greg Musteau.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hilda B.
Chris.
Liam Rogers.
Steve Buscemi, fueled by gas station sandwiches and erasure mixtapes, plays Dota 2 Tidehunter only. Oh my god, he's gonna hit that alt. He's gonna hit that alt and stun everyone for 6 seconds. It's a big play. That's all you can really do is Tidehunter.
Big play Buscemi, that's what we call him. Ollie _ Suts.
Kate the Great.
Mike Hart.
Soggy Newspapers.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
Saturn Video.
That last name was my favorite.
Big Nick Lane.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
Kiwi of Lerve.
Serial Killer X.
Wade Norcross.
Blake Cavan.
Dan Antonio.
Kit Bush.
Sarah Ernie.
Sarah Sin.
Dennis Wright.
Jover the Moon.
Oh boy.
Goblin Grader tests the character count as a public service to all 69, 72, 75, 78, 81, 84, 87, 90, 93, 96, 99, 103, 107, 111, 115, 119, 123, 127.
Woo! It's a 128 character limit.
Jesse.
Cameron Ganzeveld.
I feel used. Chris Curto.
Cole Gleason.
Several upset horses.
Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
Matt Septor.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. Vitizen. I'm tired of people saying that's not what that is.
Kyle O'Neill.
I called it when Nick Murphy called it. Tonight at 11.
Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Goon Cahoots saw Undertaker at Walgreens. What was he buying?
How are you still alive?
We forgot to change our Patreon name for a while, but Jeff Webb, parentheses big baby, and I still appreciate all the ongoing bits in the book.
In the book.
In the butt.
You see, this is why Goblin Grader did that public service for everyone.
Just, Alpaca Queens. Yes.
Traku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink. Doink. Anthony Stoker.
Brony _Danza.
Tanier Hyde.
Spencer Y.
Wunderskin.
Max, Schism Advocate, pledges his cup facing upward, yes.
Thank you, Schism Child.
Thank you, Schism Child.
Goes down for the schism. You're welcome. Dog Lips _ Kajoyan.
Wunderskin again.
Hey, what's going on with you, Wunderskin?
Bjarn?
Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll, a.k.a. the real Mr. Bad Boy.
I'm a bad boy.
Her, a.k.a. Cyber Bully.
Chris and the Canine Conundrum.
Greb Comics.
Barbin.
Talene McKnight got married to Ross, not from Friends McKnight.
Oh, congratulations.
Congrats.
What a royal wedding. Logan Kilgus.
Bosferatu.
Starship Nine.
Kumquat Behavior Podcast.
Proper Spaceman.
Canadian Ghoul.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Smellities.
R.I.P. Chad Quant. His paranoia didn't save him from being hunted by troll prodigies in the wizard shope.
I like it. It's really encompassing my entire life and death. Elodie.
Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
Thank you, Tome Child.
Good dear king.
Agents Miskatonic.
Lumo Nuva.
Brian Udath.
Julius the Nice Dragon.
Ooh.
Nail Seven.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Nowhere Lucas.
Brian Storrow.
C.L. Reagan pledges his ice church tithes to Chad.
Thank you, Reagan. Thank you for your Fall Out Boy love. Ben Flioyos Sire.
A valiant attempt, Chad. Justin.
Gumblegore.
Bob Cabbage.
Shayna S.
Jaybird, you're on the right track.
And welcome to the Book of Names, John Farrington.
Hello and well met, Jolly O'Jules. Let us know where you fall on the schism lines.
Oh my god, we've attracted the attention of the number one gnome.
The number one gnome, welcome. And welcome to the Book of Names, Nat Noah. Thank you all so much.
You're our eternal roommates forever.
Goodbye. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.